Welcome to Inside Analog Photography Radio Program. I'm your host, Scott Shepard, and of course, the Inside Analog Photography Radio Program is all about traditional process photography. We talk about instant photography. We talk about black and white. We talk about color film. We talk about dry plate, wet plate, you name it, alternate printing processes, everything going on in analog photography. And of course, the Inside Analog Photography Radio Program is brought to you by Fujifilm over at www.fujifilmusa.com/professional. They have beautiful C41 color neg, black and white, color chrome, and of course, instant. Instant film rocks. These guys have so much great things going on right now with instant film. Of course, they have the pack film in 3.25 by 4.25 and 4.5 color, black and white, high speed black and white. But you know what's even cooler? They have the Instax cameras and film. The Instax Wide is in the country, available everywhere. And of course, right now, brand new, the Instax Mini is now in the U.S. They have cameras. They have film. This Instax Mini is 2.5 by 3.5. It's the size of a business card. This is really fun stuff. You got to check it out. www.fujifilmusa.com/professional, making life more colorful. Our friends at Richard Photo Lab, the place to send all your film to get developed, proofs, you name it. They got a great workflow going. www.richardphotolab.com. DR5. For the most unbelievable proprietary process to turn your black and white film into positives, into chrome. You won't believe until you get your film back as a piece of chrome will blow your mind. The dynamic range, the latitude, it's just unbelievable stuff. Definitely check it out, www.dr5.com. Iger Studios, Lenny Iger, the place to have high-resolution scans done. You know, a lot of people now are shooting analog. They're using a high-resolution scan. They're making digital negatives on an inkjet, or maybe they're going straight to an inkjet output. But they're making digital negatives and they're printing contact prints. They're doing all the stuff you need to get a high resolution scan. They're using an Aztec Premier, 8,000 PPI, adjustable aperture. They can give you scans that are basically grain free. They can adjust it for every kind of film out there. This is crazy stuff going on with Lenny Iger and the guys at Iger Studios. Check them out, igerstudios.com. And of course, Upstrap at upstrap-pro.com. The camera strap that will not slide off your shoulder. Our media partners, www.apug.org, the Analog Photography User Group, the place on the web for all things analog process. This is a great place to learn, to share information, to get tips and tricks, the community for analog photography, www.apug.org. And of course, our photographic philanthropy partner, George Eastman House International Museum of Photography and Film, www.geh.org, the place to go to find out about the history of traditional analog photography. These people are keeping this alive. They have over 7,000 cameras in their museum of everything that's ever been made, including the Hasselblads that were shot on the moon. You name it, they have the collection. This is a great way to help support. You can be a member of George Eastman House organization. They have a lot of great things going on, but this is something you can do to help give back to photography, to help keep traditional analog photography alive for generations to come. Definitely check them out, www.geh.org. This week on Inside Analog Photo, we're going to have with us Todd Heido. Todd is a San Francisco-based photographer that's been featured in Artform, the New York Times, Vanity Fair, many publications. His photographs are permanent collections of the Guggenheim, the San Francisco Museum, the Los Angeles County Museum, and others. His editions of his books have been sold out many, many times over. All kinds of great stuff Todd's up to. He's a great photographer and a cool guy. Todd, how you doing today, buddy?
I'm doing pretty well. It's a windy day here in San Francisco.
The weather's crazy this time of year, and with all this other things going on, you never can tell what's going to happen. Nevertheless, a beautiful day, and I really appreciate you joining us here on Inside Analog Photo to talk about yourself, your photography, and what you're up to. So, Todd, give us a little background on yourself if people haven't seen your work or heard of you. Tell me about Todd.
Funny, that's always the hardest thing to say when somebody asks you, what's your work about? But basically, I'm a photographer. I've been shooting, I guess it's been about 20-some years now, which is amazing. I don't feel like I'm that old enough to do anything for 20 years. I shoot a lot of night shots, and I shoot a lot of landscapes, and I shoot a lot of portraits. Of course, the reason I'm on your program is because I shoot film. I've always used analog, and I print everything myself, and I've always used Kodak products and stuff. And that's basically what I was raised on, and I'll keep using it until they stop making it. And hopefully that doesn't happen too soon.
So tell us, how did you get involved in photography? What brought you around 20 years ago to say, you know, I want to be a photographer?
I think that how I really got started in photography was basically I used to race BMX bikes, and I was a teenager, and I was amazingly the state champ in Ohio for 4 years. I was really into racing, and my dream as a teenager was I was going to move to California and become a photographer for BMX Plus magazine, which was this magazine I used to like live by, you know, literally when I was a teenager. And that's what got me to pick up a camera, really, is that kind of thing. I also had done a few shots and things like that when I was a kid, like photographing my room and photographing my family a little bit and stuff like that, just with point and shoots. But it was really the BMX that got me interested in photography, like taking pictures of my friends jumping ramps and these things we'd build in our front yard. So that's how I got started.
So with doing the BMX bike deal and wanting to actually shoot for the magazine, did you do any formal training? Did you just start buying gear? I mean, how did you progress with your photography?
It's interesting, the kids these days, they have all these different options, but I just had an old Nikon camera. It's just really the most basic thing you could have, and I would just use that. I remember getting it for a birthday, and it was something that I used a lot. But it wasn't really anything like specific. I was just more like shooting my friends, just jumping ramps, things like that.
And how did that progress to where I want to start shooting this art I'm doing? Because you're doing some really cool photos. And like you said, we'll get into this about a lot of night photography. But how did you go from getting this first Nikon to progressing the BMX sports photography, or how did that work?
I think what ended up happening was it just kind of got me to pick up the camera and do that. And then curiously, all this was like before I was 16. And then as soon as I got my driver's license, I ditched the bike and started driving. So everything changed then. And I think that what really got me kind of like more going towards the direction that I'm in now is that I took a high school photography class, your basic high school photo. We had a dark room there, and I had a really great teacher, and it was this kind of thing that I did. He recognized that I did something well, and he would tell me about it. And I just kind of kept getting more and more into it. And I was really encouraged by my teachers in high school. And that was really the thing, I think, that pushed me into basically going on to art school for photography. And then one thing just kind of leads to the next after that, for some of us, if you work real hard.
Exactly. So you get out of high school and you're like, okay, I want to continue my photography. So you went to art school.
Yeah, exactly. I went to this little school in Pittsburgh called the Art Institute of Pittsburgh. It was basically like two-year trade school for photography. It was kind of place where you basically learn all these techniques. You learn everything from being your town photographer that does high school portraits to photojournalism to advertising and stuff like that. And it kind of just exposed you to this whole range of photography. And that was really perfect for me at that time because I knew I liked photography, but I hadn't really thought about like which area of photography I would get into. So it was perfect to just be exposed to all these different things. And then ultimately what happened is I ended up going to some workshop out at the Anderson Ranch in Snowmass Village. It's basically out in Aspen, Colorado. And it was this place where I met this photographer, Roy D. Carava, an African-American guy from Harlem that was a really amazing photographer that worked in this really kind of subjective and dark and moody way. And I think that that was one of the people that really first turned me on to, wow, photography is not really necessarily commercial. There's this whole artistic side to it that's a path that I didn't really know much about. Then I eventually ended up learning more about that, and then I transferred to Boston Museum School, which is where I really kind of blossomed, I think, in terms of my art making and the real foundation for what I do today.
Now, when did you go to Boston Museum School? What year was it?
I think it was like 1989. I transferred there, and I was there probably until 1991 or 92. But it was an amazing time to be there. I had some really great students. We just had a really good class. Our teachers kept saying, you guys have a great group of people here. This is a good experience. Because I teach too, and I know that the makeup of the student body at any given time really determines what's going on at the school. And I was just with some really good people that were super into photography, and it was really exciting. That was a good period for me.
So how did you get from Boston Museum School to California?
Basically, what ended up happening is I got out of school and I worked for a couple of years as an assistant. And I got an assistant job through being a printer at first. In school, we really learned a lot about printing and darkroom work and these things that I still, to this day, utilize. I got real good at printing, and so I basically went to see this photographer that was really good in Boston, this guy named John Goodman. And he saw my prints, and he liked my pictures, and he immediately said, well, hey, I'm reprinting my portfolio. I have a darkroom right in my studio. You want to work for me? And then I just kind of started the next day, and I would print his portfolio for him. And then one thing led to another. You're in there every day, and then he gets a job, and he's like, hey, what are you doing tomorrow? Do you want to be my assistant? And so that's kind of how it works, because when you get a job and you want to hire somebody to work with you, the person that's right next to you, if they're available, that's probably one of the best people to hire. That's kind of how I got started with that. And then ultimately, how did that get me to California? It didn't really. I had worked there for about 2 years, and it was really a lot of work. I think that it was an important thing because I basically learned that you could get a lot of stuff done in a short amount of time. The guy I worked for said to me, "You're really good, but you're too academic," which meant that I was too slow. And so he's kind of like, pick up the pace. You need to be able to do this really well, but do it fast. That was actually a really good lesson because I think that I still am able to just get a lot of stuff done perfectly in a short amount of time. So that was a good lesson to learn. But then eventually that all got tiring, and then I decided I needed to go to graduate school because I just needed to not work 40 hours a week for somebody else. I needed to spend my time working for myself, and then basically moved to California to go to the California College of Arts and Crafts, which is where I went to grad school. And that was about 1994.
So let's talk about your style of photographs. You like to shoot a lot of stuff at night. Very beautiful photography. Interiors, your landscapes, they all have a very unique look to them. I think it really speaks of reality more than bright and sunny and happy and pure. It seems very realistic. That's what I'm looking when I see this. So you have a really cool body of work about houses and apartments. And I love this night photography. And people would typically think, well, if I'm going to shoot a picture of this house, it's got to be sunny and perfect in a beautiful blue sky with some clouds, and it's got to be no cars in the way. And you're capturing stuff that's really there.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, how that kind of started is I've never been the kind of photographer that, like, staged things or adjusted things too much. I always have been the kind of photographer that prefers to just sort of shoot what I find. And I love, I guess, the hunt for photographs. I love driving around and sometimes walking around and just looking for, like, that place I'm going to photograph. And a lot of times when I find it, it's just sort of like I basically just photograph what's there. And I think that there's something about reality that's really important to me. I wouldn't want to adjust things or clean things up. I guess there's a much more kind of realistic approach. And actually, one of my friends said to me, "Your work is so unsettling because it's real." Because we live in this world where so many people stage their photographs, or so many people Photoshop their photographs, or they have tons of people working for them to make this one picture. And this stuff is all just me in a tripod and some film, and basically just doing a long exposure and making these pictures happen. So I just prefer the simplicity of that. I wouldn't want to drive around with an assistant for hours and hours and look for pictures. I just prefer to go out and do that kind of stuff on my own, and I always just shoot what I find. So that's how that kind of works.
Well, no, like you said, a lot of them are very stark, and it is reality. And I think a lot of people don't document what's going on with reality.
Yeah, I guess that's true. I think for some people, reality isn't enough, or they don't see it as being interesting enough. They think there needs to be something that's bigger or built up or lit better or, like, more strange or something like that. And I just like that not over the top, just realistic approach.
Let's talk about some of your portraits you have on your website that are very cool. They have a certain unique look to them. They're not oversaturated. They're not over the top. So how are you achieving this kind of look? I guess maybe different than the long exposure night stuff, but let's talk about these portraits that you're shooting here. What are you shooting on film-wise?
I shoot Kodak Portra 400NC, and that's basically the film that I've been using. They haven't made it for 20 years, but there was this other films that they were making that led up to this Kodak Portra 400NC. And I was always interested in these 400 speed, like, muted colors or natural colors, I think is what NC stands for. And I use that for everything. And so at night, it's perfect because there's a lot of contrast at night, and this lower contrast film knocks that contrast down. And then with my portraits and other things that I shoot, there's just a softer palette with it that I'm really interested in. I love color, but it doesn't have to be, like, super vivid color. I'm more interested in kind of softer hues and muted colors. And then as far as the portraits go, all that stuff is also natural light. And usually what I do is I find a place to shoot in, and then I'll bring somebody there and we'll photograph there. Or sometimes go to somebody's apartment and shoot at their apartment. But a lot of times I prefer to shoot in hotel rooms because there's something about hotel rooms. There's this character to them, and there's this temporary quality to it, and it's not too personal. You don't see people's personal effects. It's basically kind of this blank background that often has really great darkening curtains for sculpting the light and adjusting things and making the light kind of work for you where you want it to be and blacking it out where you don't want it to be. So kind of the ideal environment for using natural light.
And that really comes across with these portraits and these photographs is you don't see any personal possessions in them. Like you said, they're stark, and it really makes you concentrate on the subject and not so much the whole environment. The environment definitely tends to lead to the feel of the photograph. But you concentrate on the subject itself and not the picture on the wall or plant or a lamp or something. It's just, here's the person.
Right, exactly.
And definitely the way the light is shaped with this 400NC and the natural light has a very unique look to it. It's very cool.
Yeah, it does. And that's the other thing I really like about that film is that I'm able to use it indoors and outdoors, daytime and nighttime. And it just sort of has the look, just for the simplicity of a website, it's all separated into subject matter, like houses or portraits or interiors or whatever. But when I do my books, I've got 4 books that are published. I often mix together inside and outside and portraiture and nighttime shots. And then I also do that for shows a lot. And so by using the same film, all my work has the same kind of feeling to it. Like it has the same look and the same grain structure and all that kind of stuff. So it just sort of blends together seamlessly. So that, I think, works real well.
No, it does. I mean, this stuff's beautiful. It's very eye-opening. And I think that it definitely shows a dose of reality, especially with some of the subject matters you have with these hotels and occupied homes and the foreclosed stuff. It's just very cool.
Thank you.
So let's talk about when you're doing your photography. Do you have a topic in your head when you go out shooting? Do you just drive around and say, whatever hits you, you're going to grab? Do you have a project you're going to work on and say, okay, I'm going to go look for some really stark 60s-styled abandoned homes?
Yeah, I think for me, what I end up doing is I end up driving around and just sort of looking for stuff. Basically, the way it works for me kind of is I have these areas close to where I live that I know I can go to that have the kind of places that I'm interested in. And I've just found those by basically driving around. And there's one particular neighborhood kind of out in South San Francisco that I love because literally it's a Levittown neighborhood, which Levittown is one of those first suburban developers back in the 50s and 60s. And basically when I discovered that neighborhood, it was really awesome because I was like, wow, this is this place that looks like the East Coast and Middle America. Doesn't look like California. And that really struck me because the key to this, it reminded me of where I grew up. And I think that with all my work, whether they're landscapes or portraits, there's something about them that reminds me of where I have been or who I've been with or that kind of thing. So it's basically, I guess, what I'm looking for when I go out and shoot. I basically grew up in Kent, Ohio, and I basically grew up in this new suburban development in the middle of the cornfields. And so I used to ride my bike down all these rural roads to go to the BMX track and stuff like that. I've always been interested in these rural pictures as well because that's a part of my world as much as the suburbs are. Like, for instance, sometimes one of the most exciting things to do is to go somewhere you've never been before. As we all know, we've all had that experience when you're traveling, everything looks new or seems different or is exciting. And I think that's true. And so this place that I found up in eastern Washington, just this area kind of around Spokane, that is very much reminds me of an Ohio landscape. It snows up there and go there in the winter and shoot, but it's the kind of place that literally it only takes me 2 hours to get to on a single Southwest flight instead of flying all the way to Ohio to shoot. So I'll often do that. I'll just go and fly up there, shoot for 2 or 3 days, and then fly back home. And I do that often, not just to Spokane, but try to go to these different places. Never been to North Dakota or South Dakota, so I'm curious to go out there this winter and see what it's like. But usually what I'll do is I'll just go on one of these trips and then I rent a car with no plans or destination or anything in mind at all. And I basically just kind of go and drive around. And I'll shoot during the day and I'll shoot at night. And then you can always find a hotel room somewhere. Sometimes I'll shoot in the hotel room too when I wake up in the morning or at night even. And then I just get up the next day and repeat the whole process and try to just kind of expose myself to as much new turf as I can.
Do you typically go on these adventures solo, or is it just Todd and where I'm going?
It's just me and where I'm going, basically. I'm sure every photographer has had this experience of you're taking a picture and there's somebody waiting for you. I hate that feeling where you're like holding somebody up because you're shooting. So I basically always shoot by myself for this kind of stuff. There's jobs and stuff I do where I have a crew of like 10 people with me sometimes. If you're looking at my website, toddhydo.com, basically every picture that you see on there, I'd say that 99% of them I took while I was just by myself. And so that's kind of how it works. There's something about you're on the hunt for pictures, and that's a fun and exciting thing, but it's definitely, for me, a solo experience.
I know exactly what you mean. When you take someone with you, they're always waiting. It's got to hurry up.
Exactly.
And you can tell by a lot of the places that you've shot your photography would not be a recreational environment for a partner to be with you.
Exactly. Totally true. It's interesting. So I just do it by myself. It's funny, there's always people waiting for somebody at the darkroom, too. They never understand that it takes so damn long.
Definitely, definitely true. Todd, let's talk about some of this night photography and how you achieve this look. Let's talk about gear. What are you shooting with camera-wise? What do you like for glass? What are you doing for equipment?
I use a Pentax 6x7 camera, one of the old manual ones. That camera, it's funny, I remember checking that camera out of the photo cage back in school in Boston. And as soon as I used it, I immediately fell in love with that camera because of two reasons. One is there's nothing to it. It's just like a big, fat 35mm camera, but it has that gorgeous 6x7 negative, and it's got really great lenses. The lenses are super sharp. Some of the prints that I make for my shows are as big as 40x50. People always assume I shoot with a view camera because my prints look so sharp and clear, but everything I do is with a medium format camera, and it's the Pentax 6x7. And as far as lenses, it's interesting. I'm very simple. I can tell you what lens I used for every picture, because if I was indoors, I used a 55mm lens, which is kind of sort of wide lens, but not too wide. And then if I'm outdoors, I guarantee you I used a 75mm lens, which is sort of like a wide lens, but not too wide. I like that wide angle feeling, but of course I don't want any distortion and all that kind of stuff going on in the picture. And then the other thing that I think that gives my pictures the look that they have, there's a real deliberateness, I think, to some of them, especially the ones of the houses at night in terms of composition and stuff, is that I always use a tripod for doing that. I have a level that I use on my camera to make everything straight and square. I always like it when the lines are perfect and they're not bowing or keystoning or anything like that. And then on the contrary, with my landscape photographs, that stuff, not all of it, but a lot of it is shot through the window of a car. And then, as you can imagine, it's not easy to put a tripod in a car, so I don't. I usually shoot that stuff handheld, and most of the time it's a wide open aperture, and I'm shooting through the window, and I kind of let the rain build up, and then it sort of literally disintegrates the picture, kind of, and makes it into something that's more painterly. Sometimes I'll just sit there and wait for the water to accumulate, and then I'll shoot when it looks right, and then, of course, it gets too blurry, and then I'll clear the window with the wiper, and then start over again and then see what happens there. So there's an element of chance involved in all that, which I really love. I think that something about photography and chance has always been a super important and integral part to it. And I think that a lot of people that are good photographers, they've been able to harness chance in some way, or they basically know what to do to make these accidents happen and things like that. Like Gary Winogrand, he had it down. He'd walk down the street and just kind of not even look through his viewfinder and just shoot from the hip. And you would get these just random things that would happen, compositions that no one could think of because it wasn't thought of. It was just done. I think for me, there's a little bit of that going on with my landscapes with the rain on the window. I don't know what it's going to look like, but I know how to set it up to make these things happen for me. So that's kind of how that works.
No, they're great. Are you metering off the hip? Do you take a handheld spot meter with you? How are you metering for this stuff? Are you using what's in the camera? What are you doing?
If my meter can read it, I'll do what my meter says. I have just a little Siconic DigiFlash meter or something like that. I don't even know exactly what it is. It's a little digital meter. I'll use that if it works, and it usually does work if there's enough light. It's like all my portraits and all my landscapes are done with that meter, and I just do incident reading, do what it says. And then the night shots, the meter doesn't work in that zone of light. It doesn't work with that low of light. So basically, what I've done, it took just about a month to figure out, like going out shooting, bracketing, and then going back and shooting again, and just finding what the best exposure was. And I just knew over a short amount of time that, like, oh, if I'm by a streetlight, it's f22 at 6 minutes. If I'm farther away from the streetlight, it's f22 at 10 minutes. Or if I'm at the Walmart parking lot that's lit up completely, and I'm shooting something that's kind of off to the side, it might be F22 at 2 minutes. And so I just figured out over time just a super simple methodology of just exposing the film. It's literally bracketing and looking at the results and picking the one that works the best. And that's the beauty of negative film, is that if you overexpose it, it's fine.
So with shooting Portra 400NC, this is pretty much all you carry with you. So you don't have to really worry about any other emulsion. So I think it probably really helps you to concentrate more and then trying to always worry about this film or this speed or that.
That's totally true. And I always tell my students that every successful photographer I know doesn't experiment with films and papers. They experimented a little bit over time. They experimented, figured out what worked for them, and then they just kept using the same thing over and over and over again. And that's exactly how I am. I don't even think about film or paper. I just know what I use, and that's what I get, and that's basically the bottom line. And then the beauty of that is, like, again, you just know it, and you don't have to think about it. When I'm taking pictures, I never think about technical stuff. I'm always thinking about just shooting and what it is I want to photograph and how do I want to make it look and what do I want to convey and all that kind of stuff. So it's nice to have that technical stuff just out of the way because it can get confusing. This last weekend, I was at the Photo Plus Expo in New York City, and I've actually never been to a trade show before, and I'd never been to this show before, and it's one of these massive trade shows with all these booths and these guys with microphones talking up their thing and doing these demonstrations. It was almost like 50 infomercials going on at the same time. It was overwhelming. I walked in there, I was like, holy shit, like, this is crazy. And then the thing that's ironic about it is that it's all the newest and greatest and latest stuff. And I went downstairs and did this lecture, and one of the first things I said to the students was, hope you're not too confused by all that stuff you saw upstairs, because frankly, you probably need about 1% of the things that you saw up there, and the rest of it's just getting in your way. It's like, you don't need all this stuff to make pictures. You don't need the latest and greatest, most megapixel camera. They had some good Gitsu tripods up there that were awesome. You just need simple equipment. Cameras don't make pictures, and film doesn't make pictures. People make pictures. I think it's important to figure out what you like and what materials you like to use and what cameras and what lenses you like. And then after that period of figuring it out, you just sort of focus on your creativity and not your equipment. And I think that that's an important lesson for people to learn that basically are trying to figure out their way in photography. I have a lot of students that are always like, I want to do this, I want to do this, I want to do this. And it's like they never get good at anything because they're constantly moving around and they never spend any time with something to even learn it enough. And that's not just with film and paper and our cameras. It also has to do with what you're shooting. For me, I think those portraits, I worked on that stuff for years and years. My landscape pictures, also years and years, and my night shots, I think that before I really started to totally figure out what the look was for them, took 3 years of kind of shooting them, is to really get it nailed down. The other thing that happens a lot, I think, for people is that they wonder, how do you develop a body of work? Or how do you really get deep into something? And I think that there's a tendency that people have these days, they work on a project, and then they do it, and then they put it out in the world, or maybe they'll work on it for a year, or they'll have a show, or they'll make a little book, or they'll put a section on their website, and then they kind of move on after that. And I think that for me, much of my work, I think that I've really, by working on it for years and years, and I also should mention that I work on multiple projects at the same time, you know, I'm not just focused on one thing. And that's why just things just kind of come slowly. But they, I think, come from a deeper place because if you have a lot of pictures and you're trying to add new ones to them, you don't want to make something that looks just like you made before. There needs to be some kind of a variation to it or some kind of a difference. And sometimes it's really subtle, but sometimes the work just gets better and better the more you do it. So I think that for me, I like to work on things for a long time before they're really done. Like some of these things I might not ever be completely done with, which would be great. Because it always gives you something to do, so.
So let's talk about that book process. You have 4 books now, right?
Yeah. Yeah, there's House Hunting was my first book, and then I did a companion book to it, Outskirts. And then the next book was a book of nighttime and daytime landscape photography. And then the fourth book was called Between the Two, and it's basically mostly portraits and nudes, but it also has some exteriors and night shots and things in it as well.
So are the books a secondary thought after you went out and shot this work and then these projects start to develop and you start getting this body going? Or is it, I'm going to do a book on this subject? How does a book deal come along compared to you shooting your photography based off of what people put in museums and in the galleries that sell your stuff? How does the book thing come about?
Yeah, as far as the book thing comes about, and even my shows the same way, it's usually I've made my work. Let's just start with the first book because that's really where kind of it starts. Because once you have a book, having another one, there's a different process to it. But basically, I had made my work. I'd made these pictures of houses at night, and I've always been interested in books. And my publisher had seen some of my pictures at a gallery, and then I knew of his stuff. And then we met. I think I bought a book from him at this fair they used to have called Photo SF. And I had a booth for his books, and I remember saying, hey, I really like your books. And then introduced myself, and then he said, oh, hey, I really like your work. And so we appreciated what each other did. So when the process to making a book happened, it was kind of a much smoother thing. So with that particular book, we really just kind of looked at some of my pictures. We knew that we were interested in doing something with the houses at night. So I had the work all existed, and it was just a matter of editing it into a book form. And how that kind of occurred was mainly because I had this keen interest in making books myself. I remember bringing a box of photographs, and there was maybe 50 of them, and he liked them all. I liked them all, you know, otherwise I wouldn't have brought them. And he basically said, well, here's the size that we want to work with, and here's the amount of pages. Why don't you edit these together and show me what you've made? And then basically I just went and did that, and we looked at it, and I showed it to a few other people, of course, too, just people that I knew that trusted their opinion, and then he liked it, and we just kind of went with it. So I also have somehow or another, I don't know how, but I have a very good sense of editing. Some photographers can't edit, and some photographers can edit, and luckily I'm one of those people that can edit stuff. I can look at a group of pictures and sort of whip it into shape. It's fun. Actually, I love it. I love doing that part. I also like doing it for other people, too. It's interesting. So I just gather together the pictures that I'm curious about using and then just start to sort of weed through them and link them and add one to another one and create relationships amongst the pictures and get them going together. And so that's kind of the process of how my books have come about, by doing it that way. And all my books, I basically said, okay, I'm going to do this book. Here's what I'm probably interested in thinking about. Let's get out all the pictures that I might use, then we'll just sort of go from there. I just basically lay them out and move them around. I always use tiny little versions of them, like thumbnails. I use color Xeroxes, and I just kind of shuffle them around and then organize them and then start the process of putting them into an actual book and flipping the pages, because that's how you really tell how a book looks, is by actually turning pages. So that's how that works for me.
What's your thoughts on these new found book deals like Blurb and these other companies where you can basically just throw everything up online and they'll print a book for you?
Well, I think they're actually great. I've seen some really great Blurb books. I actually should say that I was a juror for this contest, the Photo Book Now contest this year. I was one of the jurors for the fine art section, and it was awesome. I got to see about 250 books that we had edited down to. And then we spent an afternoon, me and this critic, Vince Aletti, and a curator, Anthony Bannon from Eastman House. And also the other juror was Dana Ficanti, who edits Blind Spot magazine. And it was the four of us. And then also the key juror was Azarius Himes, who is a man about books, let's call him. He used to work at the Photo Eye bookstore, and he's become a real expert on photography books. Anyway, so we juried this contest, and I got to see all these different books by all these different people that had entered. And I was really blown away by kind of the process of some of them. I mean, some of them were really good, and some of them were not so good. And often what made a difference was somebody having good design in their book, realizing that a photography book isn't just a bunch of pictures, but it's this whole entire unit where it's good design, and it's a good choice of the size for your pictures. I've never made one myself, but I know that there are different sizes you can pick, because bigger isn't always better. I mean, some of the best books that we saw were these smaller books. And so basically, I think that the print-on-demand technology is a really great thing, and I think that it can yield some really exciting things. And I think that also one of the dangers of it is that it's almost like the internet. There's some great stuff out there, and then there's tons of junk. And then basically with any print-on-demand, anything that there's no floodgates to control it in some way, that's how it's going to be. If anybody can do anything, you're likely to find the most remarkable stuff that you would just never even think of. But you have to wade through all the other things to get to it, and hopefully it's not too diluted. So you can see the cream will always rise to the top, I think, but it's just a matter of how do you get to that part. That's the thing we don't know. We don't know how it's all going to shake out in the end with anybody being able to make a book. I mean, who knows? Is it better that there's this established set of publishers that kind of somehow or another control what is published and what is not published? Or is it better that just anything can be published and anybody can make a book? I don't really know the answer to that, actually. I think that remains to be seen, basically.
What do you look forward to moving forward with your photography? I mean, you're out finding new landscapes. Is there an area that you want to go that you haven't been able to hit? Is there something that you want to work on that's completely off kilter from what you've been doing? What in your photography, besides creating what you're doing and just going out and shooting, is there anything that you really want to do?
One of the things that I've been trying to work on, and it's hard to organize because it's all about coordinating, is there was a picture I did. I think it's on my website. It's a new photograph. It's like a figure out in the landscape. It's a person standing outside, and it's kind of like this combination of my portraiture and my landscape photographs. I've been really wanting to work on that more, and I have been. I love that painterly effect or the painterly feeling that I get from my pictures that are shot through the window. And so I've been wanting to do that with portraiture, but outdoors. And so basically the hard part is coordinating. It's hard enough to know when it's going to rain. And then coordinating somebody to go out with you and stand outside in the rain while you take their picture is the other part that's hard to coordinate. So I'm working on that. Basically, I have a few people kind of on hold for when the rain starts to come. A couple of weeks ago, we had a huge storm here, and I had this really amazing person standing up on the edge of this cliff when it was just pouring rain, and the wind was blowing, and she was totally psyched about playing this person in distress and me photographing this isolated person out on the edge of this cliff. So I love the picture, and it was something that I'm definitely working on, and I'm really excited to do more of these pictures and sort of see where I can take this and see what I can do with it.
What do you think about a tip for other photographers that want to forward their craft? I mean, this is just stunning work, and you've had great success with getting your work into museums and private collections. I mean, it looks like you've had a lot of solo exhibits and combined stuff. I mean, give a good tip to someone if they want to get their work. Because a lot of people go out and shoot, but they never print. They never make prints. They never try to get stuff in galleries anymore. And I think right. This is even one of the problems with digital photography. People shoot and it never leaves a hard drive.
Exactly. I completely agree. I feel like that's the number one thing. There's so many people that don't have access to a darkroom these days because even the schools are closing down some of their darkrooms, at least the color darkrooms. I think there'll always be a black and white darkroom because that's a pretty simple thing. I mean, you can set up a black and white darkroom in a closet and it works. I think the key thing is to not let your pictures sit around and be on a hard drive or sit around as contact sheets or digital contact sheets or whatever you end up making. I think that it's really important to do something with your work. I think that one of the key things is if you want your work to be in galleries, you have to understand that galleries sell objects and that they sell these things that hang on the wall. They're things that people take home and hang on their wall. And I think that it's really important for you to kind of get your object on in some way. I mean, that's silly, but it's like you need to figure out how to make good objects that people want. And it's not that you would make your work to sell. I think that that's the kiss of death. And that's why some people are successful and some people aren't. Is that fortunately for me, I'm making the pictures I want to make, and fortunately people want to buy them. And that's a lucky thing. I mean, I feel extremely blessed that I'm able to make the kind of pictures I want to make and that there's an audience for them. And that's the other thing, is like audiences. I think there's an audience for everybody's work, and I just think that you need to figure out how to find it. And how do you go about doing this? Actually, one of my students at CCA sent me today this PDF that I had already known about. But he was excited that he discovered it. There's a woman named Mary Virginia Swanson, and she has this website. I forget exactly what the website is, but if you just type in Mary Virginia Swanson, it will come up. She's basically almost like a coach or a consultant for people that want to learn how to get their work out in the world. And she has a book that you can buy that costs not much. I'm sure you can just download it from her website. And then there's tons of information on there about how do you find your audience? How do you get your work out into the world? What kind of steps do you need to take to do that? And I think that hearing it from somebody like that, she knows everyone in the business, and it's really good advice. So I would check out her. I would say somebody wants to get their work in galleries, I would check out her website and read what she has to say about it, because she knows what's going on.
And where can people see your work?
Probably the number one place is toddhido.com, which is toddhido.com. And then there's another place that they can look, and this is a whole other conversation, but I also do some commercial photography, editorial photography for the New York Times Magazine and Wired and the London Telegraph and Dwell. But there's a place where you can see some of that work, but also even more of my artwork. I have an agent in New York, and their website is called edgereps.com. It's like edgereps.com, edgereps.com. They have a whole section of my work up there. And then also, if you want to see the real thing, there's a show. It just ended in New York at the Bruce Silverstein Gallery. But they always have work in the back. Don't be shy about asking to look at some prints. All they got to do is pull out a rack of pictures, and there they are. And then also in San Francisco at the Stephen Wirtz Gallery at 49 Geary Street. In Los Angeles at the Rose Gallery that's in Santa Monica at the Bergamot Station. Those are the places you can see the real thing. And they're all real nice people, so don't be shy about asking to look at some prints.
Now, the real thing, tell me about your process on the real things. So you've got all the stuff you've shot it on Portra 400 in C. Are these optically enlarged prints? Are they done like on a Durst, an inkjet hybrid process? How do you do your artwork?
No, they're all C prints, like an Omega enlarger. I don't know what kind it is, like a D2 or something like that. It's old. I print at this lab called Light Waves. They basically rent me the space out at night, so I'm able to use it to print. And basically, anything that's 20 by 24 or smaller is something that I've physically been there to help make. I have an assistant in the darkroom that I work with because I used to do it all myself. And then I had somebody help me once, and I'm like, oh, I can print on three enlargers at the same time if I have somebody else help me. So we basically work together, and we make these 8x10 prints at first to see what they look like. I'll do a shoot, make contact sheets. I'll look at the contact sheets, and then we'll start just making 8x10 prints of anything that I like, just kind of work prints. And then basically from there, I look at those and live with those for months. I never just jump to a 20x24. So I look at those and think about it. That's another thing for photographers. And another reason you got to get your work off your hard drive is because you got to have your work out and on the walls, like where it's visible for you to see. I have a little office at my house that I use, and it's filled with photographs. Probably 30 or 40 little framed pictures just kind of sitting around. And I got them in my other rooms that I work into. I just like live with my work, and I'm around it every day, and I see it. And then after looking at stuff for a while, I'm able to determine, well, this is really one of the good ones. And then some of the pictures fall away, too, because, of course, not everything I make is good. I mean, I'm just like everyone else. If I shoot like 10 rolls of film, maybe I got one or two good pictures. That's just kind of how it works. And then after making these 8x10s and living with them, I'll go and make 20x24 prints of them. And those are the size that I show my prints in. And then other prints that I make, and I don't make these myself. There's a printer named Jennifer Key at Lightwaves that does these large mural prints for me. And then she just basically matches the 20x24s that I give her, that I made. So she's kind of matching my prints. So I'm not doing the hard part of being there for half a day to make one print. She's doing that part. So that's how that works.
Very, very cool. I really appreciate you joining today. This is beautiful photography. Great work. Very inspiring, Todd, on what you're up to and how people can go out and capture reality. What you're doing is so cool because it's not a super stage set with 15 assistants. The beautiful sunny day with the great background being at Yosemite. I mean, it's reality. Yeah. It's very cool reality, and I think that people should look at your work. It's just beautiful stuff.
Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate you talking to me about it. You've asked some good questions. That always brings out something good, and got to have a good interview.
Thank you, and I think we definitely should chat again about your commercial work and some of the other stuff you're doing, because we could just talk for hours on this, but I think it's a great overview here to let people know what you're doing and just get inspired by shooting film. And doing this great photography you're doing. I really appreciate it, buddy.
Yeah, definitely. No problem. I'd be glad to talk some more. And also for all the people out there, don't give up film. Definitely, there's something about it. There's a quality to film that if we let go of it and we don't use the stuff, it's going to go away. And it's just, I beg you to use film so it doesn't go away.
Todd, thanks so much, buddy.
Okay, take care.
Well, there you go. Todd Heido, what a cool guy. Beautiful photography. Very, very cool stuff. You definitely want to check out his website. Over at www.toddhido.com. Really cool stuff. Definitely check out Todd's work. It's stunning, beautiful photography. The Inside Analog Photography radio program has been brought to you by Fujifilm, making life more colorful over at www.fujifilmusa.com. Our friends at Richard Photo Lab at richardphotolab.com. DR5 over at www.dr5.com. Iger Studios over at IgerStudios.com, Upstrap at Upstrap-Pro.com, and of course, our media partners, APUG, the Analog Photography User Group over at www.apug.org, our photography philanthropy partners, George Eastman House International Museum of Photography and Film over at www.geh.org. I've been your host, Scott Shepard, here on Inside Analog Photography Radio. We'll be back next week with more great analog photography.